Welcome, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Today is March 19th, 2016. I'm your host, Matt, and we are live here for the next, about 57 minutes. We got to change. Things have happened. Change of schedule. So I'll be telling you about it a little bit later on in the show as to what we're going to be doing at the ending part of the show. But anyway, it's been too long. A week is too long for me to stay away from the mic. I'm glad to be back here. We're going to have all sorts of information coming your way. If you want to be part of the show, the number is 254-773-1400. That's right here in the studio. You can talk to moi, me. If you want to contact me via email, go to aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. Just like every other week, I have an opinion piece. You know, and I was wondering to myself, I said this on the last show on 105.1 The Ranch just this morning. Sometimes I'm wondering, am I going to be able to come up with something for my opinion piece? Like, what's really affecting me or hitting me or making me want to make a commentary? And sure enough, something happens in the course of the week that says, okay, there it goes. This is the opinion piece. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to read to you my opinion piece that affected me just this last week. To be honest with you, it affects me all the time. But in the course of thinking, well, what am I going to do for this week? This hit me. So here we are. This opinion piece is titled, Am I Obnoxious or Is It Just You? Let's start off with the word space. S-P-A-C-E, space. What does that word mean? Well, I'm going to tell you what it means because you guys know me by now. I love definitions. Got to know what the word means so I can act accordingly upon it instead of doing something that is totally opposite of what its meaning is. So here it is. Space. It's a noun in this particular definition. A continuous area or expanse that is free, available, or unoccupied. Synonyms for this word would be room, capacity, area, volume, expanse, extent, scope, latitude, margin, leeway, play, and clearance. Let's go to the word space as a verb. Position. Two or more items at a distance from one another. And synonyms for that word would be position, arrange, range, array, dispose, layout, locate, situate, set, and stand. Now, let me tell you about the different types of space when it comes to you and I, the individual. Number one, the intimate zone of space. Number two, the friend zone of space. Three, the social zone of space. And then four, the audience zone of space. Now, let's go backwards. Let's go backwards on what we just talked about. If I don't know you and I have no plans on meeting or introducing myself to you, I would expect you to be in the audience zone, away from me. If you're in a social zone, I would expect you to be in the same room as me, or about the same distance if we were outside. We may be saying courtesies which are done from a slight distance as, hi, having fun? Glad you can make it, etc., etc. If you're in the friend zone, then I expect us to get caught up on things and we'll most likely be within our arm's distance of each other, arm's length distance from each other. If you're in the intimate zone with me, well, you're probably, let's just leave it at that. The intimate zone is someplace you shouldn't be. I'm not going to talk about it on public radio. You like that, Paul? All right. What am I talking about here? Where am I going with this? This is where I'm going. If I don't know you, you don't need to be in my personal space when I'm in the cashier line, when I'm at the bank, when I'm eating dinner, or anything else for that matter. Stay away from me. I was at a CEFCO convenience store the other day, and this guy with his wife and kids were right next to me. I mean, right next to me. Not only that, he was putting his items in front of me on the counter. I stood there for a second, then turned to him and asked, I'm sorry, sir, am I in your way? And he goes, no. He didn't even bat an eyelash. He didn't get the blatant hint that he was violating my personal space. I used to think, maybe it's just me being weird that someone is invading my space. But guess what? If you invade my space, you're the obnoxious one. I guess it would be called common courtesy, especially at a bank. I don't want people knowing what I'm doing, especially with my money. So word of the wise, if you don't know me, stay away from me. There are better ways to get to know me than invading my personal space. Now, obviously, I'm being a little wild here, but I'm not that obnoxious myself. In other words, you can't come near me. Sure you can, but if I'm there at the cashier line, up at the cashier, and I'm doing business, I'm conducting my business on the next one in line, and you decide to come up from your position in line and start putting stuff all around me, getting next to me, I'm wondering, what are you doing? Why are you near me? I don't want you near me. Why are you putting your products here? I'm not paying for your stuff. So it's just stand back, get back. Common courtesy, everybody. Okay, let's go over show highlights. Paul, do you think I'm obnoxious, or do you think it's the other guy?
Other guy.
Okay, I got a vote in my column. Show highlights. Today's License to Carry segment will go over eligibility when it comes to getting a license to carry in the state of Texas. Lots of people ask me, if I have this on my record, or if I have this, can I get my license? Well, listen to this segment. It's coming up soon, and you'll be able to answer your own questions. Again, I'm going to read three stories from the NRA's Armed Citizens column of the American Rifleman, and we're going to see what kind of information we can glean from those stories, maybe help us in the future. My PEP section will be a continuation of my License to Carry segment, only this time we're going to discuss the common sense aspects of carrying a weapon. And in today's Topic of Interest section, I'm going to go over all of our upcoming current events, all of our events in the near future, so you can mark your calendars and hopefully attend some of these functions, classes, gun shows, etc. And also, Paul, you're going to help me on this one. I have a very cool product spotlight today. I'm going to be showing you military field phones and actually put them to work. These things are great to have in an extended emergency situation or just to call the kids out from the treehouse for dinner. So they're going to be pretty cool. We'll have this on video too. Paul, this will be a video. Later in the show during the gun training demo, I will demonstrate the three types of shooting positions when it comes to using a handgun. And Paul, that's going to be a video as well. So stay tuned. Get your pens and paper ready. Take some notes. Because now it's time to start the show, and we're going to go right into the license to carry aspect of the show, and this one we're going over eligibility. Now, excuse me, I've been having a lot of calls lately with people asking me if they are eligible because of this or that in their life. And even though I've read this a couple of times before, it's probably good we do it again for all the new people listening and for all those who have decided they may want to get a license after all. There are 14 requirements. Some I'll read fast, others I'll slow down. So if you don't have a license and you're thinking about getting one, listen up. It's better to know now if you're not eligible than applying for the license, taking the class, and paying the fee just to find out you can't get it. Because once you pay the fee and you're not eligible, you can't get a refund on it. So it's better to know now. So with that, we go to our trusty student handbook here. Excuse me. And when we do that, we always mark the page so that when you do the show, you have access to your notes immediately. Here we go. Certain eligibility requirements must be satisfied before a person is issued a license to carry, an LTC, by the state of Texas. Number one, you must be a legal resident of Texas or otherwise be eligible under 411-173A of the code. Two, you must be at least 21 years of age. A person under the age of 21 may take the proficiency course, must be 21 before submitting an application to the department. And here's an exception. Military personnel. Notwithstanding subsection A2, a person who is at least 18 years of age but not yet 21 years of age is eligible for a license to carry a concealed handgun if the person, one, is a member of a veteran of the United States Armed Forces, including a member of, or a veteran of the Reserves or National Guard, two, was discharged under honorable conditions if discharged from the U.S. Armed Forces, Reserves, or National Guard, and three, meets the other eligibility requirements of subsection A except for the minimum age requirement by federal law to purchase a handgun. Okay. Number three. You must not have been convicted of a felony. A felony conviction makes an individual ineligible for a license to carry. a person with deferred adjudication, probation for a felony offense that is not a Title V offense or Chapter 29 Penal Code offense, is still not eligible for a period of 10 years. I was mentioning it on the other show, I'm pretty sure a Title V, Chapter 29 Penal Code offense is a heinous crime. I think it's like rape or kidnapping, child molestation. I believe it's those and those. I'd have to research. If you want to go check it out, Google it real fast to see if I'm right. Once again, if you want to call into the program here, be part of the show, it's 254-773-1400. Going on to number four now. You must not be currently charged with the commission of a felony, a Class A or B misdemeanor, or an equivalent offense, or an offense under Section 4201, the Penal Code, disorderly conduct. A person who has charges pending is not eligible for a license to carry. They should wait to apply until the charges are dismissed, assuming they are otherwise eligible at that time. Excuse me again. Number five. You must not be a fugitive from justice for a felony or a Class A or B misdemeanor or an equivalent offense. This could apply to a person who skipped a court date or to a person who has failed to comply with the terms of a court order. Six. You must not be a chemically dependent person. A person with two convictions within the 10-year period preceding the date of application for offenses Class B or greater involving the use of alcohol or a controlled substance is ineligible as a chemically dependent person. Other evidence of chemical dependency may also make an individual ineligible for a license to carry. So think about that. If you get a DWI twice within 10 years, you're drinking while intoxicated or driving while intoxicated. You can drink while you're intoxicated too, can't you? So driving while intoxicated, two DWIs within 10 years, they consider you chemically dependent, and then you cannot get your license to carry in the sphere of license to carry. License to carry has its own set of rules. So what might be okay outside those set of rules won't work for license to carry. Number eight, correction number seven. You must not be incapable of exercising sound judgment with respect to the proper use and storage of a handgun. Eight, you must not have been convicted in the 5 years before the date of application of a Class A or B misdemeanor, an equivalent offense, or an offense under Section 42.1 of the Penal Code, disorderly conduct, or equivalent offense. This is important. The date of conviction, that is the date the judge signed an order, not the date of the arrest, is used to determine whether a person's five-year period has expired. A conviction may occur several years after the arrest. Remember, conviction includes both probation and deferred adjudication for purposes of eligibility. Number nine, you must be fully qualified under federal and state law to purchase a handgun. The NICS law includes several eligibility requirements for purchasing a handgun. A person with a dishonorable discharge or a conviction involving a misdemeanor crime and domestic violence, for example, is disqualified under the NICS law from purchasing a handgun and is therefore not eligible for a license to carry. Moving on to number 10. You must not have been finally determined to be delinquent in the making of a child support payment administered or collected by the Attorney General. A person must clear up any delinquencies in paying court-ordered child support before applying for a license to carry. 11. You must not have been finally determined to be delinquent in the payment of taxes, fees, fines collected by the comptroller, state treasurer, tax collector of a political subdivision, alcoholic beverage commission, or any other agency or subdivision. A person must clear up any tax delinquencies before applying for a license to carry. Ladies and gentlemen, if you owe $10 in taxes, you're not going to get a license. So if you're able to, either pay them or get current with them. And if they accept being current as compared to being paid in full, you might be able to get your license to carry. I think you have to be in good standing. And in each department, I believe, determines whether or not you're in good standing. Number 12. You must not be currently restricted under a protective order or restraining order affecting the spousal relationship. If a person's spouse or ex-spouse has a protective or restraining order against the person, even an agreed order, then the applicant must wait until the order expires before applying for a license to carry. 13. You must not have been adjudicated as having engaged in delinquent conduct violating a felony grade law within 10 years of the date of application. This section applies only to juvenile offenses, not to felonies committed by adults. Juveniles are not convicted unless certified as an adult. And 14. You must not have made any material misrepresentation or failed to disclose any material fact in an application. If a person fails to include something on an application or request that was required to be listed, the individual is not eligible for the license and the application will be denied or the license will be revoked if DPS discovers the misrepresentation after it's been issued. It is important to remember that the application fee is non-refundable. And if the applicant is denied, the individual must completely reapply and take a new course if they become eligible in the future. Therefore, you should make sure the applicant is aware of all the eligibility requirements before the individual applies. So there you have it. If you want to take a class, get your license to carry, and you're not sure if you're eligible, you can replay this show probably around 2 o'clock on my website, aaronsgunshop.com. You go to the radio show page, and you can click there and listen to all the other past shows to via podcast. Or you can go to the DPS website and look up license to carry eligibility requirements, and they'll have them all there as well. So if you want to check them out, if you have any questions as to whether or not you're eligible, go check those out. Listen up, read it yourself, and determine whether or not you're eligible to get a license to carry. All right, with that now, we're going to move on to our NRA section, the armed citizen. And in this section, I'm going to read to you three stories from the NRA's Armed Citizens page of the American Rifleman. And hopefully from these true stories, we can learn what to do and what not to do, and maybe even get a laugh or two in the process. It all depends on the story. If you're not a member of the NRA, you might consider becoming one. The more gun supporters they have and the more muscle they have to stop bad legislations, the better our rights are going to be. And I know they do stupid things from time to time. Everybody does stupid things from time to time. Keep them in check. But in general, it's a force to be reckoned with, and we need to support it if at all possible. Now, ladies and gentlemen, these three stories that I've got here from the Rifleman, American Rifleman, are coming out of March 2008. And my first story reads like this. It's a story not even anti-gun media outlets could ignore. Matthew Murray allegedly wrote online, "All I want to do is kill and injure as many Christians as I can." Police say he made good on his word, first by killing two young students at a missionary training center outside Denver. His next target was a gathering of 7,000 people in and around the New Life Church in Colorado Springs, Colorado. With a rifle and a backpack full of ammunition, Murray entered the church and opened fire. Sadly, two sisters were killed. One man yelled to distract the gunman and was shot in the arm. That's when volunteer security guard Gene Assam, who has a concealed carry permit and once worked in law enforcement, yelled, "Surrender!" Armed with a handgun, she walked toward Murray and shot him several times. "It seemed like it was me, the gunman, and God," Assam recalls. His twisted plan foiled. The immobilized gunman killed himself. My commentary. Gene, it was you, the gunman, and God, because no one else was armed to stop this crazy lunatic. 2. All you anti-gunners and just scared people, when will you learn that the criminal doesn't care if the sign says no firearms permitted? To them, it's their free ride to a massacre. My suggestion to all you gun-intimidated people would be to grow a set of onions. Let's get with it. Going to story number 2. I'm going to pronounce this name wrong. I'm just going to call this person Fred, okay? Because I can't pronounce his name. Fred was operating his roofing truck when two men began yelling at him about his driving. According to police, the men who were white got out of their vehicle and yelled racial slurs while approaching Fred, who was black. The men pounded on the truck and tried to yank Fred out through the door. One of them was armed with a knife. "Get out of the truck," they screamed. But Fred is a concealed carry permit holder, and in fear for his life, he drew his handgun and shot both men twice. One suspect died, and the other went to jail. Fred was not injured. My commentary. I don't care if you're black, white, red, or yellow. I'm not racist at all. You try pulling me out of my vehicle to harm me, and I don't care what color you are. I will stop you permanently. So great job, Fred. I applaud you. Story number 3. Again, from March 2008. Rob Pierce Jr. was walking to dinner when two men, one a self-proclaimed Crips gang member and the other wielding a handgun, accosted him. With a gun to his back, Pierce was dragged across the street to a dimly lit area and told he was about to be killed. "It was like hell," he explained. Pierce, a concealed carry permit holder, drew a .357 revolver and shot one of the suspects, causing both suspects to flee. They were later apprehended, and Northampton County PA District Attorney John Morganelli said he hoped the incident would teach these young thugs that the good guys might be armed. We don't expect our citizens to wait and get shot. As long as I am district attorney here, I'll probably going to err on the side of the citizen, said the district attorney, adding he supports concealed carry laws. My commentary. Ladies and gentlemen, there comes a day and a time when everyone gets caught in the net of life or death. Being prepared will greatly, greatly enhance your preservation of your life, okay? Or you can just be scared of guns because you have no backbone and become a victim to the next creep or crip that comes down the road. Take command of your life. Don't be afraid of a piece of metal. It's a tool for you to use. Learn it. Make it a tool for yourself, okay? We're going to break with a commercial here, Paul, and we're going to come back in about a minute and a half, and we're going to go over our PEP section, which will be a continuation of License to Carry to some degree, and I'll explain why when we get back. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. Again, my name is Matt. Today is March 19th, 2016, and we are live here. We'll be here live for a little more. And if you don't have your license to carry license and you want one, you need to go to aaronsgunshop.com. When you're there, go to the license to carry page, the LTC page, and there you'll find the upcoming classes that we offer. Sign yourself up to take a class with me so you can be on the road to getting your license. Why wait till it's too late to get your license? Defend yourself now. The course time is approximately 5 hours. And that includes your written and shooting test. The fee for the course is $60. Trust me, everybody, you don't want to be bored, and you won't be bored with my class. I've been teaching for a long time to a lot of people, and I've got lots of tricks up my sleeve to help you do better and learn more in a shorter period of time. So go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the license to carry page, and sign up now for a class. They fill up pretty quick, so don't wait too long. Go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the license to carry License to Carry page on the website. Okay, I want to talk to you about, or not talk to you, but I'm going to read to you some common sense from an article here. But common sense when it comes to carrying a concealed or openly carried handgun. It's always good to get different points of view, even if they end up being the same view. What's good is that people in the same field of study, living different lives, doing different things, come up with basically the same common sense rules of how to handle yourself when carrying a handgun for self-defense. Since that is the case, I'm going to partially read an article to you out of the Concealed Carry magazine written by John Cale. Now, again, I'm reading because I agree with almost all of it, and it's good to know that the common sense training that I teach is universal. We're not reinventing the wheel here. We're just learning how to balance the tire, check the treads, and be sure that the air pressure is right. So let me pick and choose from this article and give you some good, meat and potatoes as to the common sense when it comes to carrying here. And again, the headline on this one, or the article title is Carry Common Sense, and it's from John Cale out of the February-March issue of the Concealed Carry magazine. It reads, whether you're brand new to carrying, to the carrying community, or you've toted a gun for decades, it's a good idea to regularly review the fundamentals. Serious professionals in every field, from real estate agents to pilots and Navy SEALs, do recurring training, often focusing on the basics. you and I are no different. You always want to master the fundamentals, everybody. In this brief article, rather than reciting dry legal jargon, we're going to focus on simple, real-world do's and don'ts that can help us avoid mistakes that have landed others behind bars or dead. First section here is how the system works. We've all heard those opinions on the internet of internet amateur lawyers ranting about how some defendant should have been acquitted, adamantly declaring that the law says what they did was perfectly legal. But legal statutes are only the tip of the iceberg, and case law is always changing. Besides, these experts seem to forget that in court, their opinions don't count. Remember, there is no single formula for the legal application of force in self-defense under American law, says attorney and self-defense author Peter Hubbard. The law is dynamic and always a matter of interpretation by prosecutors, judges, and juries. Remember that word last week I mentioned was reasonable? I may think one thing's reasonable and you don't. It's all interpretation. After any lethal force encounter, authorities investigate using testimony of police, the defendant, the assailant, witnesses, surveillance video, and more. If prosecutors don't see a conviction, they'll likely agree to dismissal. If it's a case they are confident they can win, they'll try offering a plea agreement, basically an easy conviction, or go to trial. All right, so that's how the system basically works. Now, steer clear of trouble. To quote a tough old homicide detective, avoiding trouble is simple. Don't do stupid stuff. Don't hang around people who do stupid stuff. And don't go where stupid stuff happens. Avoiding problems begins with awareness, and I always teach that. I teach the three A's. Acknowledgement of a threat, aware of your surroundings, and avoid it if at all possible. Three A's. Avoiding problems begins with awareness. In a world of texting and tweeting, I see far too many folks staring like zombies at their smartphones and tablets, even while walking through areas like dark parking garages. Look around. Stay alert. At the moment any situation appears threatening, find the exit. Obviously, you're not expected to abandon others who are in danger, but even if your state is a stand your ground law, if there's a way out, take it. After all, if you're able to avoid having to shoot someone, it will always be better and cheaper for you. Equally important, never pursue an assailant after they have broken off the attack. After the threat is over, your right to use deadly force ceases. Ignoring this rule can be costly. Next subtitle is pick your battles. One of the primary elements of successful self-defense claim is that the defender was an unwilling participant in the altercation. You did nothing to initiate, escalate, or provoke the confrontation that resulted in the use of deadly force. You are in effect just minding your own business. Avoid getting into arguments over silly stuff. Someone takes your parking place, find another one. In general, unless there is a clear threat, let it go. I have a friend, a former ranger with multiple martial arts black belts, and I have personally seen him simply shrug his shoulders and walk away from a loudmouth troublemaker. If the jury sees you as, legally speaking, the aggressor in the conflict, you're in trouble. A perfect example is road rage. In a word, don't do it. Instead, be outrageously courteous in your own driving. I don't care how horribly or even aggressively anyone else drives. Do not retaliate. Slow down. Change lanes. Whatever. If someone is driving downright dangerously, call 911 and describe the vehicle and the driver's behavior, but never engage. Drive as if every other driver is armed. After all, they might be. Consider the 2013 Michigan road rage case in which two angry drivers, both with legal permits, ended up shooting and killing each other. Flipping the bird is another incredibly stupid and legally dangerous move. There is no upside, but there is a tremendous potential downside. Prosecutors salivate if they discover that you've given the finger to someone. They can use it to cause an injury to see you as an angry, hostile, and belligerent aggressor. People, not property. Deadly force is protecting human life, not property. Remember that even home defense is invariably about protecting people in the home, not the dwelling itself. No matter what you think you are allowed to do to protect property, it is an established reality that jurors, even those in so-called gun-friendly states, don't like people winding up dead over possessions. The principle was clearly illustrated by several recent cases involving homeowners who left their homes to investigate intruders in their detached garages, or even worse, set up traps to bait would-be thieves. They were convicted of charges ranging from felony assault to first-degree murder. Castle Doctrine laws are not a human hunting license. Be smart. Call 911. This one, absolutely. Smile. Cameras are everywhere, with more of them every day. Everything you say and do before, during, and after an event can be critical, and now your behavior will likely be recorded. Recent high-profile cases have shown how much influence videos can have. Behave yourself. Lawyer, lawyer, lawyer. It's probably unnecessary to say in today's world, but have a cell phone with you at all times. It is imperative to be able to quickly call 911 and then your lawyer. You must also learn precisely how to call and what you say and not to say. Basically, less is more. But talk to a good self-defense attorney and get the wording down, as it is slightly different depending on whether shots are fired or not. And speaking of attorneys, you should have the same or the name and number of a good attorney programmed into your cell phone. If you don't have one, get one, okay? And then finally, shut your mouth. If you forget everything else, make sure you remember that if you're involved in any incident where shots are fired, your statement to arriving police should be extremely short. My recommendation to my students is, officer, thank goodness you're here. They tried to kill me. I don't want to say anything more until my attorney is with me. And continue on. By the way, recent court decisions have decreed that you must clearly and unambiguously, I hate that word, assert your right to stay silent and have a lawyer immediately. Otherwise, your silence can actually be used against you. Again, speak with a good attorney and then listen to what he or she tells you. It's common sense, everybody. It all boils down to common sense. And with that, we're right on track. And so, Paul, let's set it up for another break. And ladies and gentlemen, when we come back after this, we're going to go over our topic of interest. We're going to get you basically up to date to what's going on here. So we'll be back on the other side. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Again, it's March 19th, 2016, and we're continuing on here live. Are you looking for, or have you thought about getting advanced or specialized training when it comes to using a firearm? Have you thought about it? I'm sure you have, because you're listening to this program, right? If so, you need to go to aaronsgunshop.com's High Cap Adventure page. And on that page is where we have listed our special training seminars. Those seminars, they include our home and self-defense training seminar. That's one of our most popular. The ladies only home and self-defense. That one's fantastically popular with the ladies. Combat shotgun seminar, M4 close quarters combat training seminar, semi-auto rifle training seminar, and our PEP program seminar. Now, people ask me, what's the difference between the M4 and the semi-auto rifle? M4 is specifically designed for AR platforms, pistol, rifle, anything designed like the AR. Semi-auto rifle would consist of your Ruger Mini 14s, your SKSs, AK-47s, all different types of semi-autos. Go to the High Cap Adventures page and read what each seminar offers. These seminars are geared for the homeowner or the regular Joe or Jane on the street there. They're not for or designed for combat operators. And I tell people, look, when something happens, if I'm teaching you and you're at your home, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and you're in your boxers, I don't know, unless you sleep more comfortably than that, and you hear some bump in the night, you're going to jump out of bed, put on your flip-flops, probably throw on your shorts, I hope, and grab your gun. Are you going to put on your tactical vest? Are you going to have your combat boots on? Are you going to have those extra mag pouches? No, you're not. So why would I train you like that? And if you're going to come to my training and you're taking a class like that, I don't expect you to get all dressed up the way you will not be if this stuff really happens. Dress the way you're going to be and train the way that you are, so if something happens, you can handle yourself. All right? So anyway, that's what those classes are set up to do. They're for people like you and I, not the spec operator who goes through major, major training through the military. Okay, the topic of interest here. In this section, I want to go over our class dates that are coming up for license to carry, self-defense seminars, and our combo classes, and also some gun shows. And also, too, depending on the time here, I've got a story about an axe-wielding lunatic trying to kill a 7-Eleven store clerk and how a concealed carry license holder put a stop to it. I wanted to compare that to the other story I read, what was it, last week? About the guy who pulls a gun on the cashier at the grocery store and a license to carry person stops him. I want to show the difference between the gun and the axe. Then I want to read a story to you that touched me and I think is going to touch you as well about a dog. First, let's go over some dates. Let's see what kind of time we got here. All right. On March 26th, I'll be conducting a license to carry class. And that's going to be on a Saturday. And the class will start at 2:45 p.m. The course fee is not $100. It's not $75. My course fee is $60. And it will knock your socks off. You'll leave my class with an exceptionally better understanding of the legal aspects of carrying concealed or open carry. You will greatly enhance your gun handling skills and learn to read body language and diffuse situations by using nonviolent dispute resolution. So, if you have considered taking a license to carry class, the March 26th is the date you should reserve for. Go to aaronsgunshop.com, sign up, go to the license to carry page on that website and sign up there. Or check out through the whole website. I think on the High Cap Adventure page, we should be having a date coming up soon for April 7th. I'll talk to you about that in a second there. But once again, now on another day, April 8th, which will be the second Friday in April, we'll be conducting our round robin competitions. Last month was the team event for law enforcement and the benefit there, the law enforcement benefit, and Cameron PD won the trophy. This next competition, though, is for the individual competitor. The entry fee is $20 per person, and the competition starts promptly at 7 o'clock p.m. If you wish to compete, you need to be there by 6:30 to register, and it does not matter what kind of pistol you use. It could be a revolver or a pistol. It just has to be a pistol caliber. It can't be a rifle cartridge and a pistol platform. Only a pistol cartridge. If you have any questions, give me a call. Go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the homepage, and click on the gun competition link for rules concerning this event. This competition, everybody, is an excellent way for the novice and the experienced shooter to enhance their skills under time, accuracy, and familiarization restraints. The winner of the competition will receive that month's prize, and the prizes, they vary from month to month. Sometimes it's a gun, sometimes it's a gun case. It could be, it all depends what's out there and what we want to do. But even if you don't win the competition, you will have definitely won valuable experience. It's a great way to learn and enhance your shooting skills. So April 8th, that's a Friday. Be there for that. All right, moving along. On April 9th and 10th, actually, April 9th and 10th will be a gun show. But on April 9th, Aaron's High Cap Adventures Radio will be doing a live remote at the Lone Star Gun Show. That show and us, High Cap, will be there at the Bell County Expo Center. And yes, people ask me, our laser training shooting booth will be there. Everyone loves that booth, by the way. It allows you to see where you shoot from on a cold draw to see how fast your shot is. A lot of people go, well, they go to the gun range and they practice and they say, well, that wasn't quick enough. Let me try it again. Let me do it again. And they finally get the time down. Guess what? When you're carrying a weapon on the street, and the situation goes down, that gun's coming out of your holster cold. You better know what you're doing cold when you draw the holster. That's where all the basic fundamentals come in. I'm going to be there, right there, to give you on-the-spot training and to give you a few tips and pointers. That alone is well worth the $8 entry fee. So make your calendars marked right now. Mark them down for that show on the 9th and the 10th, and April 9th will be the live show, the radio show at the gun show. The following week, April 17th, I will be conducting another combo seminar. This combo will include the basic requirements to get your license to carry certificate and give you advanced training to boot. A delicious barbecue lunch is provided with this combo seminar. If you think about it, though, the seminar all by itself is $165. The license to carry by itself is $60. Well, on that day, April 17th, both classes will be taught for one price of $165. Not only do new people come to this class, but people who already have a license come as a refresher course. So check out the testimonial page at aaronsgunshop.com and see what people are saying. Sign up soon. Limited seating on the April 17th combo seminar. Very good class, $165. So check it out at aaronsgunshop.com. All right, I got about a minute or two here. I want to read to you a quick story, and then we'll take a break, Paul. Let's see here. The headline of this story says, "Lost dog found 5 weeks after falling overboard." San Diego. It sounds like a pitch for a far-fetched movie, Castaway, but with a dog instead of Tom Hanks. Only this sea tale is true. A California fisherman's beloved German Shepherd fell overboard and was presumed drowned. More than a month later, she was found. The year-and-a-half-old dog named Luna was spotted this week on San Clemente Island, a Navy-owned training base 70 miles off of San Diego. The blue-eyed pup disappeared February 10th as Nick Hayworth, a commercial fisherman from San Diego, worked on a boat 2 miles from the island. They were pulling in their traps, and 1 minute Luna was there, and the next minute she was gone, said Sandy Demonic, spokeswoman for the naval base in Coronado. They looked everywhere for her. They couldn't see her. The water was dark, and she was dark. Hayworth notified Navy personnel. He insisted that he was 90% sure she made it to shore because she was such a good swimmer. Hayworth searched the waters for about 2 days, and Navy staff searched the island for about a week but found no sign of Luna. She was presumed lost at sea. Until Tuesday, that is, when staff arriving for work on the island's naval auxiliary landing field spotted something unusual, a dog sitting on the side of the road. Domestic animals aren't allowed on the island for environmental reasons. It was Luna. She was just sitting there wagging her tail. The staff called to Luna, and she came right over. A biologist then examined the dog and found her a little thin, but otherwise healthy. It looked like she was surviving on rodents and dead fish that had washed up on the shoreline there. Officials called Hayworth, who was out of state working in the middle of a lake doing some type of job. He was overwhelmed. He was so happy and grateful and thrilled. Luna was flown to the Navy base on the mainland Wednesday and handed over to Hayworth's best friend, who will care for the dog until Hayworth's return. Now, Luna, meanwhile, has a souvenir of the experience. Her dog tag was lost, but the Navy gave her a new one. Along with her name, it bears a key lesson in the survival, evasion, resistance, and escape course taught on the island to Navy and Marine personnel. The tag reads, "Keep the faith." Isn't that awesome? I thought that was great, man. Nobody wants to see a dog drown or get eaten or whatever. That's awesome. She got back, and I'm sure the owner was just thrilled to death. Okay, Paul, we're right on time. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll be going over our product spotlight. I think you're going to like this one. Go ahead, Paul. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunShop.com. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Captain Military Radio program. Did you know lots of people wonder or doubt their ability to function well in a seminar or training session? That's not the problem. The problem is finding an instructor who knows what they're doing and who is able to convey those skills to his or her students. If you have any doubts about yourself, I want you to refer to the AaronsGunShop.com's testimonial page. You'll get to watch, listen, and read testimonials from prior students of ours, stating they came in nervous, and that by the end of the day, they craved more training and information. They all broke through the barrier of self-doubt and became empowered with the knowledge that they can use their weapon and function under stress. If you've wanted to take a weapons class but were too unsure to commit, I challenge you to review the testimonial page at AaronsGunShop.com. You can do this. Go to AaronsGunShop.com. Go there now and watch the videos. You're going to see women, guys, you'll read testimonials. Just check it out. See, you can do it, okay? And if you were thinking about doing a class, go to AaronsGunShop.com, go to the License to Carry page, or go to the High Cap Adventure page and sign up for a class now. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, the product spotlight section of this program, I'm pretty pumped about this. I like this kind of stuff. This is great prepper stuff. But what we're going to talk about now is the Swiss Army field phones. And if you're not military or ex-military, you may not see the need for this product. But hopefully, after explaining this product to you, you may realize the benefit of having one in your stockpile of preparedness items. Now, of course, every military has their version of a field phone, but when I saw this, that these were Swiss field phones, I knew they had to be top quality. And sure enough, they are. They're rock solid. First of all, what is a military field phone? Now, there's different degrees of field phone, different levels of field phone, but the one I'm going to talk to you about basically falls like this in the category. It's military field phones are simply telephones that are connected to each other by a wire and are powered by a D-cell battery. And like I said, this is just one version. Some don't even need a battery. Military field phones are more durable than house or home phones for obvious reasons. They are meant to be used in the field during wartime. By using the phones, no one has access to your communications except for those who are hooked up to your phone line system. Now, these particular Swiss Army field phones are from the 1950s, but work like they did, just like they did when they were built back then. I mean, they're rock solid. They work great. They sound crystal clear, too. They've got a canvas case with a Bakelite phone body, adjustable shoulder straps, and a crank to make the phones ring. Now, you can put a phone in the house and connect the other one to the garage, the basement, or the treehouse. It's got no monthly fees. They're portable. And believe it or not, they can work up to 10 miles from each other. You just need a lot of wire to make that happen. Now, you can use plain old speaker wire, which I've got here in the studio right now. But the military wire is the best since it's designed for the outdoor use. It's more rugged. So if for some reason your normal communications don't work, such as a landline or a cell phone, and you still need communication in short distances, these field phones would certainly fix the problem. Get some, be prepared, or get some just to have some fun with the kids, okay? So I'm going to show you how these things work. Paul, and you're going to help me. We're going to be showing this on the video. This will definitely be a video clip. You can go to KTEM's YouTube channel, and you'll be able to check it out on my website as well. But what we've got here right now, if you're looking in the video, is a Swiss Army field phone. It closes up like so. It's got the shoulder strap on it. Carry it around with you. So you can take it from place to place to place. If the military has their field lines all set up, you can connect anywhere you go. You open it up. And when you do, you pull out the handset. And there it is. Looks just like a regular phone. No buttons, just a clicker. It's got a wire that goes to the main unit inside of the canvas case. That's the power. And the power is coming off of a D-size battery. So they got the mountain here. You put the D-size battery into it. And up on top, you got the two connectors where you put your wires. If you can just picture a basic speaker wire, split it down the middle, have one end on one side, one end on the other, and it's going into these caps that you put the wire in and screw it down. And when you do that, then you get the other end of the wire, and you connect it to your secondary phone. I'll tell you what, Paul, why don't you grab the phone out of there? This phone here and every phone, but there are different designs, has a crank so that the person on the other end knows when you're calling. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to crank the phone. And you hear that, right? The phone's ringing. And Paul, what you're going to do is you're going to pick up the phone, and when you talk, you're going to squeeze this handle, and then you're going to let go so that I can talk back, okay? So go ahead, try it. Say something to me.
Hello, how are you?
All right, you release the handle. I'm fine, Paul. You sound crystal clear. Isn't that incredible how clear this is?
It is.
So what we've got here is two phones going with a D-size battery. We're clicking the handle to speak. We release it to talk. And these phones can literally work up to 10 miles away on wire with a D-volt battery. They're fantastic in an extended emergency situation. All communications are down, and you want to be able to communicate with each other. This is an excellent way to do it. I've used them many a times in the military. They come in handy. But I'll tell you what. These are pretty good compared to the ones that I was using. The ones that I were using were more in the 80s, but this thing is rock solid. I've got about four of these left. They sell in sets of two. They're 80 bucks for a set. They're 150 for all four. If I've still got them when you want them, you can buy them. No problem at all. But these are fantastic. I'd highly recommend you have some form of communication, an alternative to cell phone and a landline, because you just never know what's going to happen. Smoke signals don't really work too well. But anyway, there's the product spotlight. You can check out this video. If it's not this set and you want a set, you can always find one somewhere on an auction somewhere and buy yourself some phones. But I've got two sets left for a total of four. Okay. How much time I got, Paul? About 6 minutes before the top of the hour?
Yeah.
All right. We're going to go to our gun training demo. Now, with our gun training demo, I'm going to show you three different stances. And what's nice about this is, we can learn two stances and then combine the two for an even better stance. And what we have is the Weaver stance, the isosceles stance, and then the combination of the two stances. The Weaver stance is a shooting technique for handguns. It was developed by the Los Angeles County Deputy Sheriff Jack Weaver during the freestyle pistol competition in Southern California during the late 1950s, same time these phones were made. What a coincidence. The isosceles shooting stance is a shooting technique for handguns as well. It became popular in the 1980s when Brian Enos and Rob Latham started using it to win International Practical Shooting Confederation competitions. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I trained to survive on the streets, not to win competitions, although I still compete. With that said, we go to the combination stance. This is the stance I use because it's the best. It's the best of both worlds. With the accuracy of the isosceles, I use the upper portion of that stance. But for the agility, I use the Weaver, the lower portion of the stance. And together, I become fast, agile, and accurate. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you these three now, and I'm going to make some noise moving this mic, and hopefully it'll stay up here. And it's okay. What we have here is my trusty 1911. So what we're going to do is we're going to check to make sure it's not loaded. Magazine is out. Slide lock to the rear, chamber's clear, magazine well is clear. This weapon is clear. The first stance I told you about was the Weaver stance, and that's what I used to do for a long time. And I shot very well, but when you see other tricks and tips that you can learn, you get better. I'm a left-handed shooter. So my right leg is going to be a little bit forward. I'm almost like in a boxing stance, okay? My left arm is my dominant arm. I'm extending it out, not to a lock position. What I do is I normally bring it out and slack it off just a hair. It's like a shock absorber. My right arm is bent as it comes up to the handgun. I'm putting my second hand on the gun. My right arm is bent, and I'm leaning into the shot. That's the Weaver stance. The isosceles stance is more squared off to the threat. Feet are shoulder-width apart, chest and shoulder square to the threat. It's a progressively forward position. I'm kind of leaning forward. My arms, if you can see in the video here, make an isosceles triangle. Both hands on the gun, this side straight, isosceles triangle, and I look like this. The problem with this one is I feel like a sumo wrestler, all right? I don't have much mobility or agility. So what I've done, after my training and learning from other people, I've combined it to the combat style stance, which is a combination of the two. I maintain my boxing stance or the Weaver stance, but I maintain the isosceles upper. So I've got the agility. I can run, kick, do whatever I've got to do to get out of the way, but I maintain the accuracy of the isosceles upper portion of the body. Now, let's explain another reason why I believe the isosceles upper is better than the Weaver upper. If you're looking in the video, and I'm doing a Weaver stance, when I shoot this weapon, depending on how good I am, will determine how quick the second shot will be and how tight it will be to the first shot. When I shoot, this is what's going to happen if I just exaggerate it. Watch the video. When I shoot, the arm breaks to the weak side. It arcs. See the arc? So depending on how good I shoot will determine where the second shot is. So if I shoot the first time once and I'm really good, the second shot should be right there. If I'm bad, boom, I'm going on the arc, boom. I could potentially miss the individual depending on how bad my arc is getting. Or my shot placement won't be as good because it's arcing. If I use the isosceles upper, the recoil becomes more elliptical. It's when I'm shooting, it comes up and I come back down to position. Up, back down to position. I'm not arcing. It's up and down, up and down. So if I don't hit the bullseye, I'm probably going to hit above the bullseye or below the bullseye as compared to shooting to the left or to the right of the bullseye. So those are three stances. I see a lot of people do the Weaver. I see a lot of people do isosceles. And I'm teaching more and more people how to combine the two for much more accurate shooting. I cannot tell you how much it improved my shooting. It gets the shot groups in tight. I can shoot on the run, multiple targets, all sorts of things because the agility and the flexibility it gives me, but with the accuracy. That doesn't mean you don't have to learn how to shoot one hand and alternate hands. You got to learn how to do that too. And that's for another day and for another radio show and another training seminar. But check out the video. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. The video will probably be up by Monday, or you can go to YouTube, the KTEM YouTube channel, and check it out there too. You get to watch this video. I don't know the way I did it, Paul. It might be one video with both segments in it probably. One way or another, it's going to be up, and you can check it out. This is the kind of stuff we teach. Look, I don't teach fluff. Teaching fluff gets you killed. I don't got time for that. We're going to teach you what it takes to survive on the street. I got a class coming up March 26th. That's a Saturday at 2:45 p.m., and you need to sign up for that class if you want a license to carry. And then April 17th, we got a combo seminar that includes advanced training with the license to carry. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to be signing off here in just a minute, and we're going to be playing some recorded sessions of the show. We had a schedule change here on today's show. It was unexpected, so we're going to fill it in with some repeat good information. Definitely pay attention to it. If you're using a handgun for self-defense, you need to listen to these repeat sections. You need to take a class. You need to get your ability to handle a gun to an expert level, okay? For life and death, we have no room for error. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, as always, it's a pleasure. I enjoyed it. And keep your powder dry, and God bless, and listen to the last 30 minutes. It'll be a good time.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
What I want to do in this pep section is bring onto the screen here and introduce to you my son, Dylan Bitros. Dylan, come on over here to the mic, buddy. Say hi to everybody. Say hi in French. My son is going to Southwestern University, and he's learning languages, and what is it? French is the major one, right?
It is, yeah.
tell me something in French.
Okay. Bonjour, tu te dépassant. Je suis très content d'être ici.
And what did you just say?
I said, hello, everyone. It's nice to be here.
Well, great. I'm sure everybody's saying hello to you back. Dylan, the reason I got you on here today, Dylan is an actor. He's also got his IMDb page. If you want to go there, Dylan Beatrice, check him out. He's doing quite nicely. Maybe he'll even send you a signed autographed photo. I don't know. But the reason I've got him on here today is because Dylan is my acting crackhead when it comes to our training seminars. Okay, he's not a crackhead, everybody. He acts as though he's a crackhead. And what it is, when we do our room-to-room search in our shoot house, the scenario is basically that the parent or parents are asleep in the master bedroom and somebody breaks in, which happens to be my son crackhead here acting as like a crackhead trying to steal a TV so he can buy more drugs. And so the people of the household wake up, they hear it, and they're going to room search because they got children on the other side of the house and they got to protect their children. And in the course of this, Dylan's been doing this for quite a long time. He has come to realize there's people have patterns, a natural set patterns of doing things that are not good. And so we're going to get him on here now and talk to him, and I'm going to ask him some questions. So Dylan, first, as my crackhead in my seminars, tell me just an overall, what do you think of the program, and then we'll get into the details.
Well, first of all, I really love the program just because you can talk about home invasion in theory, but as soon as you get out there, every concept that you thought you were going to follow just goes right through the window. Like, you are a completely different person than how you were talking about yourself inside the classroom. Like, I've had people that were super confident, and then they get into the seminar, and they're just a mess. They're heavy breathing, they're stomping, they're like, you know, it's all self-confidence just flies out the window when their adrenaline is pumping. So.
Yeah, he makes a comment there, and I teach this all the time, and that is, you know, you're shooting at a piece of paper, the worst thing that can happen to you is get a paper cut. But when you're put under stress, that adrenaline's pumping through your system, are you going to be able to manipulate your 10 fingers? Because they end up having to turn into like 3 fingers. And so trying to manipulate a gun with 3 fingers as compared to 10 fingers makes it a little bit difficult. So Dylan, you've done this a bunch of times. I've taught tons of students, and you're absolutely right. We see the same scenario in the classroom. You know, they've got it. They're a little nervous, but they think they got it. But once they get into the shoot house, and ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you something. We're using airsoft guns, replicas of real guns that shoot plastic BBs at a high enough velocity where it's not going to penetrate you, but it's going to like, oh, that's smarts. So when you're turning the corner, you're going to think twice before you do it because you don't want to get stung by this thing. But Dylan, what have you learned? You wrote a list here for me. I'm going to take it one by one. But as you're going through the house and the adrenaline's pumping, there's things that everybody seems to be doing that gives themselves away. Why don't you tell us about that?
Okay, so the first one is definitely shadows. I know, I like to say I'm hiding in one of the back rooms and someone's trying to cut a corner. Well, the simulation house that we use has a bunch of windows, so light's constantly coming through the windows and it's illuminating the area. And let's say a person's trying to cut a corner and then there's this hulking shadow that's preceding them. And so I have three choices. I can either leave, wait for them to turn around, spray them with bullets, or I can just shoot them straight through the wall. And so it really gives them away. A lot of people are not conscious of the way, like, what's on the ground or what else they're doing. The involuntary things that they're doing that gives them away.
Shadows is a big one. It really is. Now, if you're thinking it's nighttime out and there's no shadows, that's not true. You got maybe the coffee brewer's on and you got that little green LED light, or you've got some other type of LED lights, or you got the hallway light that's down there in the socket that's illuminating your walkway. There's shadows that can be cast, so you got to watch for those too. Okay. What about, you got down here, heavy breathing. Tell us about the heavy breathing.
Oh, my gosh. So, I'll give a specific scenario. This one lady was doing extremely, extremely well. Like, she was tiptoeing really quietly. I couldn't hear her. And then all of a sudden, I hear this. Well, okay, there she is. So she was coming down the hallway, so I just maneuvered around. And while she was hyperventilating, I just came out and popped her. So it really gives you away, just you're breathing. People aren't conscious of the fact that...
Well, let's talk about that. When you're going through it, I know when I'm going through it, mm-hmm. I've got to watch my breathing because I know that can be a giveaway. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, when you're controlling your breathing in a hyper situation, your body's craving more oxygen. And so you're trying to stall the oxygen because you don't want the gasping to take effect. And all of a sudden it gets to the point where, I got to breathe, man. I got to breathe. And then that moment is when you get snagged. So you've got to learn to control your breathing and be as calm as you can. Very good. Your next one on the list here is stomping.
Some people, it seems like when they come into the shootout house, it's like they have lead shoes. They will just slam their feet down on the ground, and it literally is like sonar. I know exactly where you are the entire time. And it makes it really easy for me. So if you want the crackhead in your house to have a really easy time, take all your stuff and shoot you, stomp your feet. I know some people were actually smart. They took off their shoes, and that way, like when they were in their socks, I couldn't hear them. But those that had, like, some people had boots on, some people had sneakers on, and they would just stomp around, so I knew exactly where they were every step of the way.
And the shoot house also, it's not 100% replicated like a real house where it's got carpeting, wood floors. There's dirt in there. It's on a concrete floor. And so when they're turning corners or moving, you can actually hear the gritness between their foot and the floor, right?
Yeah.
So you have to, when you first walk in there and you realize, hey, that my feet are making noise, now you got to start walking flat foot, not bending your feet. So that's another thing that's taking away oxygen from your body. It's great, though, because you don't want to get shot. Rubbing their pants legs together.
This is honestly essentially like the stomping. Like, let's say, you know how when you wear jeans and you're like, your legs are really close together and it makes that sound when the material runs together? Yeah. A lot of people aren't conscious of that because, like, you know, like, let's say you're going hunting and, like, one of the big things to keep in mind when you're hunting is to keep your legs further apart. That way your pants legs aren't rubbing together and not making a lot of noise. That's kind of how it is in the shootout house. I hear a lot of people that I'll just hear this jean friction sound and I know exactly where they are. It's just like the stomping. It's like sonar.
Dylan has become like a ninja. I mean, he's just very quick, light on his feet, and because he knows these patterns, he just takes people out real fast, which is a great thing because we're always trying to find your weak spot and enhance the areas that you're weak at. Okay, this one's very important, as they all are, but I say that because I actually teach this in the class, and that is how to turn corners. There's proper ways to turn a corner in a house if you think that there's somebody in there so you don't get compromised. So tell us about poorly cutting corners.
One of the things you're supposed to do when you're cutting corners is to keep as close enough to the wall, if I'm not mistaken. And that way you're a smaller target and you can't be hit. I know a lot of people, when they cut their corners, some people will stick their hand out with their gun, kind of like clear the area, and they'll fire off a round or something. Or some people would like stick a foot out first and then like clear the corner like they were glued to the wall.
Let me clarify what he's saying when he stick close to the wall. If you're going down a hallway and you're going to turn to the right, I don't want to stay on the right wall. I want to stay far away from that wall and stay closer to the left wall. I want to stay as far away from the turning corner as possible, like he's saying, because if I'm hugging the wall turning the corner, there's no room for error. They're going to see immediately me turning that corner. But if I'm at a distance from where I turn and closer to the far wall, I will probably see them first before they see me. That's called cutting the pie. But we'll talk about that in the seminar on December 13th, and you can come to. So, Dylan, if they're turning the corner and they got their hat on and they're real close to that wall, that you can see the brim of their hat or their foot or the barrel, and if somebody like the bad guy like you, if you wanted to, and we don't allow this, but you could if you wanted to, as the gun barrel is coming out, you grab the barrel and take the gun away from somebody, right?
I could, yeah.
Okay. Opening, closing doors loudly. I mean, that's just an obvious one. I don't understand that.
Yeah, well, like, there's not that many doors in the shootout house, but they find a way to just slam them every single time. Like, some people, when they will enter the house, instead of, like, opening the door, they'll kick it open. I guess theatrics. I guess they just want to have fun.
They see it on TV, too.
I mean, you do you, but I just know that I know exactly where you are. And I know when you're entering, I know when you're leaving, and, like, some doors creak really loudly. So if you're not careful with what you're opening and what you're doing, I'll know which entry point you're at, and I can find you.
That's right. This one here bothers me. This really does. Because I train to keep your finger off the trigger. I train to... I get guns that replicate real guns. Let's say we got an airsoft gun that's a Glock 17. I will only put 17 pellets in the gun. If I've got a 1911, I'll only put 7 pellets in the gun. It would replicate because the mechanical workings of the gun is the same, so you can interchange mags. But the last one you have here is firing off a round when entering each room.
Yep, that happens.
I mean, think about that, ladies and gentlemen. You're in a subdivision firing a round into each room before you enter it.
I'll give one instance. This person, were doing three of the other ones. Like, they were really breathing heavily. They were stomping. Their pants were rubbing together. So I knew where they are to begin with. But every time that they would cut a room, they'd fire off a round. Every single time. So, like, let's say that bullet goes through the wall, hits your kid or your dog on the other side. It flies through your house and into your neighbor's house and hits your neighbor in the leg or something. It's just, not only do I know where you are, you're going to be out of bullets by the time I get to you. Like, that actually happened. This person had completely run out of ammunition, and so I was pretty much chasing them around, like, the hunt, in a sense.
Now, tell me something. You know you know that pellet, how it feels.
Ow.
Okay? And you know when you're turning the corner, even if you're the aggressor and you're turning the corner, mm-hmm. you know there's a chance if the person outdoes me, he's going to shoot me. So doesn't it make you think twice before you turn that corner and make you think of all the training that you got so that you can engage that turn with much more professionalism than just going out there and putting your neck in a noose?
Absolutely. Like, the concept of danger makes everything real. Like, if there's no possibility of me getting hurt, I won't care because there's no threat to me. But, like, I've been hit by those suckers in the throat, and that hurts. And so I know that I don't want to get hit by one of those things.
Let me make something clear, too, ladies and gentlemen. You're all wearing protective gear. This is just every now and then because he's in there all the time, and he's getting shot at by 15 people at a time sometimes. Sooner or later, one sneaks in a weak spot. But you, when you're in the shoot house, you're all protected up. You feel the impact, but you don't feel the sting. So it's a good deal. But if you really want to learn and see how you do under stress, this is the place to go and the training to take. It's aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the High Cap Adventure page. You'll see the flyers there. December 13th is the last seminar for this year. So you might want to call up, sign up, whatever, but it's going to fill up quick. So give us a call if you want. Now, Dylan, do you have any parting words before we take a break?
But my main thing is, like, in the class, we go through all of these techniques. My dad will teach, like, all the do's and don'ts before entering that shootout house. The problem is, when the adrenaline is pumping, a lot of people throw those things out the window. The most important part of it is to stay calm and remember everything you've been taught. That way you can perform adequately.
And the way you perform that even better is by practice, 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 right? Mm-hmm. You got to continue it up. The better you are prepared, the more that training will come to save you when a situation really happens. So, Dylan, thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing. I'm sure a lot of people got a lot out of that. I have talked to you before about indexing the weapon where it's in line with your sight. I've talked about magazine reloads, and now I'm going to be talking about saddling. It almost comes in steps 1, 2, 3. You got to index the weapon, put the magazine in, and then you got to load the gun. Well, that's the part we're talking about now. So with me here, I have my faithful little .45 Taurus 1911. First thing we do is check to make sure it's not loaded. Magazine is out. Pull the slide to the rear. Chamber is clear. Magwell is clear. This gun is clear. Now, when it comes to saddling the gun, what that means is, well, first let me explain. Some people, when the slide is locked to the rear of an automatic pistol, they'll have the gun in their shooting hands, and they'll want to get their fingertips of their offhand and grab the rear part of the slide and try to pull it and let it go. The only problem is, that's good for when you're in the rain shooting at a piece of paper and there's nobody trying to hurt you. But if you're in a duress situation and your adrenaline's pumping, what happens to those five fingers, they end up becoming two or three fingers. And you trying to grab this small piece of metal to pull it back to let the slide go forward, it's going to be pretty difficult. So the term saddling the slide comes into effect because it puts more meat on the slide of the gun, helping you to pull the slide to the rear and releasing it. By releasing it, it loads the weapon. So I'm going to demonstrate on video what I'm talking about. Saddling the slide. I've got the weapon in my shooting hand. I'm indexed because it's in my line of sight. I'm inserting the magazine, and as my hand slams the magazine home, my hand comes up and over the top of the slide. The palm of my hand, the lower part of the palm of my hand is on one side. I fold my hand over the top, and all four of my fingertips are grabbing the other side. I'm pushing the gun with my shooting hand and pulling the slide with my non, and I'm letting the slide forward. That is aggressively activating the gun into the ready mode by chambering around, by pulling the slide to the rear, releasing it. It puts a round in the chamber, and the gun is ready to fire all the while it's in your line of sight, so when necessary, I can take the shot. I never want to get the gun out of my line of sight. If I get it out of my line of sight, then I have to get it back in my line of sight, and that wastes time. So if we recap all three things that I mentioned before, I'm indexing the weapon, I'm slapping the mag home, I'm putting my hand up and over the top, pulling the slide while I'm pushing the lower part of the gun, letting it go. And here's one other note about loading the weapon. Please, ladies and gentlemen, don't ever grab the slide, pull it to the rear so that the slide stop releases it, and then slowly walk it forward. Slowly walking it forward is going to mess it up. Cartridge is going to pop out of place. It's not going to line up right, and you can very, very easily get a malfunction. What you want to do is grab the slide, compress that sling about an eighth of an inch more because you can. It gives you more energy to release and let the round go into battery. Okay, so that's saddling the slide. Those are the types of things we teach in our seminars. Again, go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the High Cap Adventures page, check out the seminars that we have to offer. If you have a group of five or more, we'll set up a class specifically for you. Give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com, or just go to the website directly and scout through it. I want to get into this gun training demo. Indexing. I had mentioned this before. Last week, we were discussing reloads, emergency reloads and tactical reloads, and I had made mention of the term indexing, and I also taught that class a long time ago on this show way in the beginning, but I want to do it again. Indexing has to refer to the ability to see the weapon in your line of sight so that in an instant, you can get it back on target and be able to shoot the gun. So we're going to start step by step. I am a left-handed shooter. The gun will be in my left hand. This is a toy gun. It's got the red line on it, but I'm still going to check the mag. There's nothing in it, and this is a dummy slide. The gun is secure, okay? The gun now is in my shooting hand. I'm going to do a mag change, but I have to make sure one other thing. There's people out there who may have the gun in their left hand but have a dominant right eye, or people have the gun in their right hand and they have a dominant left eye. We want to make sure that the gun hand has a dominant eye to match it. So, for example, if I'm a left-handed shooter, my left eye is the dominant eye. If you can see in the screen here, I'm going to try to explain it to you listening. I'm looking at the screen right now, and there's my line of sight, and what comes in my line of sight is the muzzle of the gun. My weak eye is my right eye, and the magazine well lines up in line with my weak eye. So if I bring the gun up to my face, you'll notice that the barrel is on my dominant eye, and the mag well is on my weak eye. So as I'm doing a mag change and I'm flipping out the mag, I've always got the gun in my line of sight. I'm taking out the extra mag, and I'm still able to see the target. I still see the tip of the gun, and I have a reference point. I see the mag well, and I insert the mag into the mag well, and I'm ready to go. And as I bring the gun around, I'm still in my line of sight, and I can take the shot. It's so vitally important to learn that technique of indexing. Now, there's different positions to put it closer to your body, further out from your body. Some people, excuse me, like to have the gun facing up and down. I like to have mine sideways for two reasons. One, I not only index my dominant eye, I index my non-dominant eye on the well. So I've got 2 points here. The other one is I feel I can get the magazine in much easier coming in from the side than coming up from the top, because I may just miss the gun. I like to see it and put my finger to the palm of my hand. There it is, and it's in the gun. So indexing is extremely important. If you have cross-eyed dominance, excuse me, if you have cross-eyed dominance, it may cause a little bit of a problem. And what I do is I always work through the problems. We find out, hey, it's not, this technique is not working for you. We find out why, and then we come up with a solution to figure it out to help you out. So look, once again, indexing, very important. Indexing is putting the gun in the line of your sight as you're doing a mag change. It helps to keep the gun between you and the threat for quicker sight acquisition, and it's a reference point to put the mag into the gun. So that's indexing, ladies and gentlemen. If you have questions on that, feel free to give us a call. Go to the website, sign up for a class. And this is a very important gun demonstration. And ladies and gentlemen, I want you all to say it at one time so I can hear it at the studio. What do you do when you get a weapon? What's the first thing you do? I'm listening. That's right. You're going to check to make sure it's not loaded. So the magazine is out already. I'm going to pull the slide to the rear, check the chamber, check the magazine well. This weapon is now clear. Now, we're going over mag changes. Let me get my notes here because I'm not going to miss a beat. The mag change, there's two different types. There's an emergency change and then the tactical mag change. The emergency mag change is where you're completely out of ammo on your mag. The tactical mag change is when you have time or there's a lull in the fighting and it's safe to do a mag change. So we're going to do that first. Now, I've got my mag set up here with dummy rounds. And let me get them in order. And let's show you on video land, and let me try to explain it verbally what's happening here. The gun has its magazine in. It's chambered. I pull the trigger. Bam. I'm in combat or whatever. I'm out of ammo. All of a sudden, the slide locks to the rear, and I'm out of ammo. And I go, oops, I need some more ammo. Well, the magazine released. What you want to do, and what I forgot to mention, is you want to see what your gun does when you release the magazine. This particular gun is almost like spring-loaded. When I press the magazine release button, hopefully you'll see this on video land, the mag comes right out. So I'm going to take that and use it to my advantage. So when the gun runs out of ammo and the slide locks to the rear, I'm going to pop the magazine out and keep the weapon indexed in my view, and I'm going to grab for my other magazine that is full. I am then going to insert the mag, drive it home, drop the slide forward, and I'm ready to go. That was an emergency mag change. I ran out of ammunition. I now reloaded. Now, in the course of shooting, let's say I've got to keep shooting, and I cap a few rounds out of that magazine, and all of a sudden there's a lull in the activity. I've got like, okay, I'm hyperventilating here. The adrenaline's pumping. I didn't count my rounds. I don't know how many rounds I got left in the mag, so we're going to do a tactical reload. And once again, I've got another mag already reserved here in my mag pouch. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to drop my mag and hold it in my shooting hand. This is what I do. There's different techniques, but I kind of swing it around and hold onto it with my pinky as my fully loaded mag comes out of my mag pouch, goes into the mag well, and then I put my partially used mag back in my mag pouch or my dump bag or something. But what was nice about that tactical reload, if you can envision this, when I shot the gun a few times and I lost count, I still had ammunition in the gun, but I just didn't know how much. So what I did was I took the mag out, but I still had a live round in the chamber. God forbid if something happens and the mag's out of the gun, at least I got one shot left to take care of business. So remember that when I'm doing a tactical reload, that means there's one still in the chamber. I'm taking the mag out and I'm putting in a fresh mag, this particular gun, 8 rounds and one in the chamber. So now I've got 9 rounds and I can maybe reload, top off the mags, or get a quick count of what I've got left. So I'm not out there wondering, hey, do I have enough ammunition to get through this fight? Okay, so there's two different ones here. We've got the emergency one, and I'll do it one more time. Got the emergency mag change. That's where the gun is fired, boom. All of a sudden, she's out of ammo. The slide locks to the rear. I go, oops, index it, drop the mag, put in the new mag, drop the slide forward, and I'm ready to go. I start shooting again. There's a lull in the shooting. I've got time to assess, see what's going on. What I'm going to do is a tactical mag change. I'm going to get the mag that's partially shot, hold on to it, take out the new mag and slap it home, and now I'm topped off with 8 in the mag and 1 in the chamber. So that is what we call mag changes when it comes to emergency and tactical mag changes. Hopefully on the video, hopefully the videos will be up pretty soon and you'll be able to check that out. That's a really good thing to learn on how to do it. And I really want to talk about indexing the weapon in combination with these mag changes. So if you want to get in-depth training, I would highly recommend you give us a call. Go up on the website, aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the High Cap Adventure page. We've got seminars that go over all this stuff. It's advanced training. You'll leave the class thinking, my gosh, how did I get along without knowing this stuff before? Let's move on, though, to a gun training demo. In my class, I go over cartridges and what they mean or what they're composed of. Larry, this goes out to you. If you're listening, Larry, a friend of mine, Larry, explained to me why it's so important to be detailed in your description of things. I would tell people, and if you can see this in the video, I'm holding a cartridge, but I would call it a bullet. Most people would just say, hey, that's a bullet. Well, in reality, it's not a bullet. It's a cartridge or a round. A cartridge in a round consists of different components. One of the components is the bullet, and that is the projectile, the part that goes out the muzzle of the barrel. The cartridge is seated inside the case, the shell casing. It could be brass, it could be plastic, it could be steel. The shell casing holds a primer at the bottom, and inside the casing is gunpowder. So when you put this whole thing together, you end up with a cartridge or a round. When you put the cartridge in the chamber of a gun and you go and cock the hammer and pull the trigger and the firing pin strikes the primer will spark. It sparks, it lights the gunpowder. The gunpowder burns very quickly and builds up pressure. The pressure has got to go somewhere. The weakest place it's going to go is at the backside of that bullet, and push it down the barrel of the gun until it comes out the muzzle and then downrange to whatever it is that you're aiming at. So that's how it works. So you have components of a cartridge, the bullet, the shell casing, the primer, and gunpowder. Once again, you hit the primer, it sparks, it ignites the powder burns, the pressure builds up and pushes the projectile down the barrel out the muzzle of the gun. The other part that's important is to understand different categories of the round. Let me clarify. If I put a live cartridge into the chamber of the gun, I cock the hammer, I pull the trigger, I do that 100 million times, and the cartridge never goes off. There's a term for that. There's probably a few different terms, but the term most commonly used is dud. It's a dud. It's broken. It doesn't work. You put the cartridge in the gun, in the chamber of the gun, pull the trigger, firing pin hits the primer again and again and again and again, and nothing happens. It's a dud. Okay, next category. If I put this cartridge in the chamber of my gun and pull the trigger and the firing pin hits the primer, but nothing happens, and then 15 seconds later it goes off, what do we call that? There's a few terms for that one. You could call that one a delay fire, a hang fire, a slow burn. But the most important thing to know is when you pull that trigger and if it doesn't go off, keep the muzzle of the weapon pointed downrange or in a safe direction just in case that thing goes off 15 seconds later. So you've got the dud, the one that doesn't work. You've got the delay, the hang, or slow burn cartridge. Now let's talk about another one. This is important to set up. I got about another minute here to tell you about it. If you put this cartridge in the chamber of a gun and it instantaneously goes off because the gun is critically white hot, super hot from use, we call that a cook-off. The thing is, you're probably not going to see that under normal use. You usually see that in combat. If somebody shooting a machine gun will say long bursts of fire. The barrel gets white hot. You can see the actual darker color bullets going down the barrel. The gun is so hot, it just set the round off, and that's called a cook-off. But at least you have an understanding now. You've got the dud, it doesn't work. You got the slow fire, slow burn, delay fire, hang fire, or you got the cook-off. So when it comes to analysis of trying to figure out things, you can use your detective work and say, hey, I know the different terms, I know what they mean. Well, the gun fired 15 seconds later, so it can't be a cook-off. I'm sorry, it can't be a dud. I'm shooting a Glock pistol, half of which is plastic. If I had a super critically white-hot gun, the plastic would melt, so obviously it can't be that. So it's probably a hang fire. So you can do a process of elimination. But that's it, the components of a cartridge and the different categories of the cartridge.